1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 FM in the Concord area, and our brand new signal in Manchester at 101.9 FM. Kale & Company, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive, conveniently located at 124 Store Street in Concord. And joining me on this edition of Kale & Company is an author, athlete, entrepreneur, doting grandfather, neat dresser, swell dancer, loves kids, cats, and dogs. He is the number one fan of Eddie Papowski. Ladies and gentlemen, the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Tom Raffio. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Listening to you is just awesome. And don't forget, on another station, the longest-running host for 13 years with the same tagline and the same curly hair that hasn't fallen out yet.
That's it. That is it. Check your local listings, folks.
And I must say, there's nothing that gets me more excited than the dairy read, really. I never could quite get that the way you do it. You don't even use notes.
Mealtime is milk time, yes.
It was awesome. There's nothing like that dairy read. The only thing better than that was your Bonsacora three-point field goal call for Sanu when you were covering Sanu basketball.
Yeah.
for Coach Spiros.
Yes, indeed. Many moons ago. You have a great memory, Tom Raffio, for sure. And Tom is the author of a brand new book called Prepare for Crisis, Plan to Thrive, the inside story of how one company did it right. And that company, of course, is Northeast Delta Dental.
Well, thank you for asking about the book. By the way, for everybody, it is at the Bookery in Manchester. If you're in the sounds of Manchester area, if you're in the Concord area, it's at Gibson's. And that's the preferred way we wish you to buy the book to help local retail. But for those of you that are busy, it is available on Amazon. So if you go on Amazon, you'll see three of my books. This one, There Are No Do-Overs, which is a leadership book with Dave Cowan, and a book on mindfulness. But this is the most recent one. And Ken, what's really, I'm not bragging about it, but what's really cool about it, it has some universal principles, but if you're into sort of inside baseball of what happens in New Hampshire behind the scenes, whether it's some of my racing exploits, whether it's how the heck did you give back $27 million to the community and still have the company make money itself, it gets into a lot of that specificity. And people don't realize it's actually hard to give away money, particularly if you're in a regulated industry as we are. So we had to get plethora of board motions, and then we had to get regulatory approval. So all of this happened late at night and on Zooms, and it was an exhausting 12 months, but well worth it. And I think people will appreciate the story. People see the end result. Most not-for-profits got money from us. We continue to support the veterans. We continue to support the Boys and Girls Club with dentistry, et cetera. But how that happens is this is kind of the inside sausage making, but explained, I think, pretty clearly. After all, I was an English major at a small school at Cambridge.
A small school in Cambridge that begins with an H, folks. So guess which one it was.
But, I parked my car in Harvard Yard. How's that?
You had some rather famous classmates as well, I know.
I did, yeah. I had Bill Gates was freshman year. He would roll into the dorm around 2 a.m. because now I'm dating myself, class of 78, so everybody knows how old I am. But in those days, you didn't have an iPhone, you didn't even have a desktop computer. You had to go to like a library or some other place, what they used to call timeshare, and you would fight to get available timeshare. So there'd be a big, huge mainframe like in Widener Library or something, and you would be sitting and you would jump on the computer. So that's what Bill was doing while we were sleeping. And he would roll in, sleep on in his clothes. And, of course, the famous line, we were a bunch of jocks, and the famous line was, you guys will be working for me. And guess what? We all are, right? We all have Outlook,
so.
Microsoft.
In one form or another, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely so. So let's talk a little bit more about the book, though, Tom. And Again, prepare for crisis and plan to thrive, the inside story of how one company did it right and how, during the course of a pandemic, were you able to give so much back to the community?
Well, first, as far as writing it, I was inspired by historical pandemics. So the first thing I did was I read John Barry's book about the 1918 pandemic. And if people haven't read that book, you should, because deja vu all over again. You'll see people on streetcars with masks. So that whole controversy isn't new. That was back in 1918, 19. Yeah. And I know you're a historian, and you know that that affected the NHL season. And I think one famous player died from that particular plague. And then I went back to like the 1100s, the big London plague, Daniel Defoe. And I read that journal. I said, you know, I should really sort of keep a journal of things. And then I'm on the board of Dartmouth Hitchcock, and Dr. Joanne Conroy is the CEO, president of Dartmouth Hitchcock, and she occasionally would put out a journal for the trustees, which I'm one of. So I said, let me start doing that. And then as I got into it, I said, this would be great documentation for the future. So getting back to your question, though, we knew immediately. It was like a three-part thing. We first had to keep our employees safe. So on March 16th, the American Dental Association said, you can't go to the dentist. You shouldn't go to the dentist unless it's an emergency. So basically, the dental industry was shut down unless you had a huge toothache. So the first thing we did was got people home, safely working from home. We did have a few people already working virtually, but for the most part, we had to rapidly get people home, get them set up at home. Initially, it may be on their iPad or iPhone, but eventually everybody got their desktop. And so we have like a diffused organization of, you know, literally 180 people, you know, working from home. But that was the first couple weeks. Then we said, okay, we got to get people back to the dentist. And, of course, we wanted dentists to stay afloat. So the next thing we did was we awarded grants to dentists, not loans, not the protection payback, things like that. This was like out-and-out grants to the dentist to keep them afloat. And then we worked with the governor's reopening task force and the New Hampshire Dental Society to come up with safe guidelines so people could return to the dentist, which they did in New Hampshire on May 11th. And then once people started to return to the dentist, then I could bring back the furloughed employees who we'd furloughed because basically there was no work to do. And then once I knew the dentists were working and we were working, then our employers who have the dental insurance, we knew they were suffering. So the next thing we did, okay, we've got to give them premium relief. So we didn't charge them premium for a month so they could get back up and running. Because here's my theory, Ken.
Yeah.
You know, if the dentists are up and running but no one's going to the dentist because no one has dental insurance, that doesn't help. And conversely, if people are going to work at an employer and they have dental insurance, they can't go to the dentist if the dentists aren't working, right? So we had to get that all fixed in. And then we thought, and then there's some real subtleties. And this is why, I mean, I'm not bragging about the book, but to me, the subtleties are exciting. So people may not realize that brokers, insurance brokers, are actually paid based on the premium that's collected. So if you waived the premium, guess what? Brokers aren't paid, right? Yet they're small employers. We want to keep them in business. So what we did was we said, let's pretend as if we did collect the premium, which we didn't. We're still going to pay you. So we paid them, it was about $700,000.
Wow.
And then we were fortunate. We have a subsidiary, that handles what we call COBRA, which is when you retire or get laid off or get terminated, there's a law, federal law, which allows you to continue your insurance. So because we have a subsidiary company called CS1 that addresses that administration, we were able to find out who they were laid off. And then what we did was we then gave those people premium relief because they're probably the very people not being employed anymore that needed the relief. So I have a stack of letters, probably 3 feet high, from individual citizens in New Hampshire that said, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Thank you. And so we did that. So all those little subtleties. And then, of course, we gave money. We're always giving money to arts organizations and other organizations, oral health organizations. And we basically told them, because we gave them the grants right before COVID hit. So like in mid-March, we paid out all these grants. We said, look, keep the money, but use it any way you want to the extent that it helps you overcome COVID. So all of that that I just described amounted to about $27 million back to the community, and that's described, in the book in terms of how we did that, and not in a bragging way. It's just basically saying that if you take the long approach, if you take the servant leadership approach, which is giving back to the community, in the long run, it helps. So the long and the short of it is, we also had a good year. Despite that, we grew the company. You know, by the end of the year, people going back to the dentist and people retained because of the premium relief. People stayed with us, and we actually sold a few groups. So we actually had a good year in 2020 and an even better year in 2021. This year, because of the loyalty that we engendered by doing what I just described in 2020. And, of course, who would have thought? When I started the book, I thought, okay, by the end of 2020, we'd be talking about something else. And remember, Ken, when people would say, I can't wait for 2020 to be over. And here we are at the end of 2021, and to some extent, not a lot has changed.
Not a lot has changed is true. That is very true, Tom. And, you know, you mentioned the date of May 11th being able to go back to the dentist. And no one ever thought, I don't believe, that dentists in particular would be open that rapidly after the start of the pandemic. I mean, we first knew about it really in March, and the dentists were reopened by May. I mean,
it was an incredible story, and a lot of people get credit for that, starting with the dentists themselves.
Yep.
Keep in mind, everybody, that dentists really since the late 80s, 90s have been masters of infection control because of HIV.
Yeah.
So we knew that the dentists and hygienists could deal with it. What we weren't quite sure of is whether the body politic, whether citizens would be comfortable going back to the dentist. Because even though there wasn't a lot known about the virus, for the most part, people knew that you get it by, you know, spit and things like that. And, of course, that's what you do at a dental office.
Sure.
So I was a little concerned about the confidence that patients would have. So we did a lot of op-eds. If you go on our website, you know, some of them are down, but I would do all sorts of the equivalent of FDR fireside chats just to make sure that people knew it was safe to go back to the dentist. And that's as I said earlier, we needed to make sure the dentists were operating. We needed to make sure that the employers still had their dental insurance, but then we needed people to go to the dentist. So it was important that we communicated that it was totally safe to go to the dentist. So I give a lot of credit to the dental community, the dental society, the Oral Health Task Force in New Hampshire, the Hygienist Association. And just as importantly, and I can say the same thing for road racing, we had a governor's task force, reopening task force, that was really receptive to the fact that we could make dental safe. You know, in a lot of states, the reopening took place several weeks later. We were one of the first states, you know, opening up on May 11th. And just parenthetically, that was the same with road racing. Most states in 2020, after March, there was no road racing. But again, the Millennium Running Team came up with protocols for how to do a safe road race, which is effectively like lining up for a Southwest Airlines flight where you're spaced apart. So we were doing road racing from June of 2020 onward from a wellness perspective. And I add that just as a not really a thrust of the book, but I do put that in towards the end of the book. So fast forward. So now we're in 2021. I think everything's set. I'm ready to publish the book this summer. And then we have the Delta variant. Unfortunately for branding, bad name, right? So, but anyway, we have that variant. So the pandemic isn't over. We get through that. And then President Biden came out with the announcement that there would be a mandated vaccination process for employers over 100, so now I had to add a chapter to that, ready to publish it, but we couldn't get the guidelines from OSHA. I mean, even though President Biden made the speech, there were no details behind it, so I had to wait and wait and wait. So finally, the guidelines come out, so I write about the guidelines, ready to publish, and then the Fifth Circuit Court says, well, no, we're going to stay them, so I had to write about that, so I'm ready to publish again. And then the Sixth Circuit Court got involved. So then I had to write about that. And I know how you like trivial information, Ken. This is actually not so trivial, but there's actually a 1951 statute in New Hampshire that may still be applicable, which requires employers to pay for things like vaccinations. That's still up in the air. So then I had to write about that. So I'm finally ready to publish, Ken, about 3 weeks ago. And then what happened? The Omicron variant.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to write about that. So then I wrote about that. And so finally I ended, I said, you know, I'll never get this published. So basically the last chapter says, you know, what if it's not over? And I cover all of this stuff. I end with a bunch of questions you should be thinking about. And basically, it's a very relevant book. And I just encourage small employers, particularly if you're struggling with the work process for what you should be doing for your employees, whether you have 100 employees or less or more, the book is extremely relevant and up to date. So I kept refining it. And so basically, you know, last week, finally, I said, we've got to go with it. And so we've got the printed copies at Gibson's, at the bookery, and it made it on Amazon relatively quickly. And just for everybody to know, any proceeds that we make all go to a foundation for oral health for underserved populations, including our veterans. So any money that we make on the book gets fed back into the community in the spirit of Level 5 leadership. And here's another. I know you love this trivia.
I love the trivia, Tom. You know that.
So I'm going to connect the dot for you. So why does Amazon own the world? Well, let me explain. So the book costs, if you buy it on Amazon, it's $20, which I think is a fair price for basically spent 2 years on this. Really cool graphics and everything. If you buy it on Amazon, the Delta Dental Foundation gets $5.86, and you've paid for $20. So I'm just saying, when you want to know why Amazon owns it. On the other hand, if you order it on Amazon, you know, 2 hours later, someone's driving up your driveway with the book.
Right. But you also mentioned that it is available at the Bookery on Elm Street in Manchester and Gibson's on Main Street in Concord.
Right across the Capitol Center of the Arts. And you know how you like me to connect the dots.
Well,
Sunday, you do it
as well as anyone I've ever encountered, Tom.
So this is the Christmas holiday show. Sunday afternoon around 4 o'clock, Sal Prizio has started as the new executive director there, and he and I are going to make a little curtain speech, and I'm going to jump into the audience with my granddaughter Havana and Ellen. And by the way, we've got to get together, and we're going to watch this performance of the Holiday Pops. So we're really excited, and I actually, the Boston Pops was were there at the Sanu Arena last Saturday.
Yep.
That was really cool. So this is a more local flavor to it. So I'll see my friends Sunday about 4. But I am going to go skiing first thing in the morning at Sunapee.
Well,
see how I throw all this stuff in? You know,
you have to have a complete day, Tom Raffi. If your day wasn't 18 hours long, you know, it wouldn't be worthwhile as far as you're concerned. So
right, and then not to be confused with Saturday, we have another road race. One of my friends, the cross-country coach of NHGI, who were third nationally, by the way, in their college division, great men's, young men's team, Harry Seagros. Well, he has what he calls a birthday race every sort of December. So that's Saturday at Bishop Brady at 11 o'clock. So I'll be doing that, and we sort of guess Perry's age, which is somewhere between 65 and 70, and you and I can relate to that, right?
Yes, we can. Well, at least I can.
So anyway, back to the book. If you're a young leader, there's a lot of leadership principles in there. There is, Baldrige performance excellence. There's how we do customer service. There's the definition of Level 5 leadership. And then the inside baseball story of how we managed to give back $27 million, being give good to the community, doing it clearly and following all necessary rules, and then still ourselves, you know, having a great year.
Well, I would strongly recommend picking up the book, Prepare for Crisis, Plan to Thrive, the inside story of how one company did it right. And did you have any of your collaboration, Tom?
Yeah, so my co-author, Diane Schmalzi, and this isn't the case of a baseball star having, you know, answering questions and someone else writing. Diane is a Baldrige expert, so I've worked with her for years to help me when we've done quality performance, excellent trainings and things like that. So I would write it, and she would say, well, this doesn't kind of sound right, and we would go, and by the way, if you've ever written a book, for this is everybody's benefit, you have to have thick skin. What you think is funny, what you think is good, you have to accept when someone says that it stinks. So she helped me rewrite it, and then, of course, in addition to all the changes, you know, the variant and the OSHA stuff, the last 10% of a book is very difficult to do because you have to, you know, you're triple-checking all of your facts, you're triple-checking, you know, all of the names. Because some books you read, you know, like, you know, whether about the, you know, some president and some conversation and the author is speculating, you know, what was President Trump talking with whoever about, right? And so you can't verify it. But in my book, if I say, you know, this person did the payroll, this person came in, you know, during the height of COVID with me, there's only like 30 of us. I mean, it has to be a zillion percent accurate because people that are reading the book in New Hampshire know all these people. So I had to, you know, triple check and make sure everything was accurate and that the numbers were perfect. And that last 10%, people will tell you it's like kind of programming, computer programming. They love the first 90%, but that last 10% of testing and making sure everything is perfect is a lot of hard work. And so that was basically every night Ellen would find me curled up on the couch between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m., you know, checking things and everything else. So I managed, my marriage managed to survive it, but Diane was quite helpful. And I think anybody that writes a book, whether you have an official co-author that you want to acknowledge or not, you definitely need someone to, you know, look at your stuff, because what you and I think is funny and well-written sometimes is not, and you have to be willing, you know, to accept that in the spirit of Kaizen, and I will connect the dot for you, Ken. That just simply means continuous improvement. Fancy way of saying that.
Continuous improvement. That's what we can all use. Hey, Tom, I appreciate you spending the time today with us here on Kale & Company. Again, the new book is Prepare for Crisis, Plan to Thrive, the inside story of how one company did it right. Tom,
it
thank you.
Gibson's Bookery, thank you. And Ken, I love your show. So great to hear your voice. You're the salt of the universe. I appreciate you so much. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll see you soon.
All right, Tom. Merry Christmas to you and your great family. Take care.
Take care.
Bye bye. Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, joining us here on Kale & Company. A delight to have you with us at 1450 AM WKXL, 103.9 on the FM dial in the Concord area, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Kale & Company, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Give them a call, make an appointment, 603-225-7988, weedfamilyautomotive.com. WKXL, New Hampshire Talk Radio, talking about what matters to you. 1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 FM in the Concord area. Brand new signal at 101.9 FM in the Manchester area. Kale & Company is presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. You can check them out at weedfamilyautomotive.com. Well, it is the holiday season, and I want to remind you that a great event is still taking place at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. It is the annual Gift of Lights, and the Gift of Lights will go on through January 2nd of this year. So still plenty of time to check out the Gift of Lights at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, and the proceeds go to charitable organizations. And it is a great family event to ride 2.5 miles through New Hampshire Motor Speedway and check out the lights. It is an incredible sight, and it's very inexpensive. A whole car load is $30 to $35. Just a great way to see the track illuminated the way it is illuminated, and trading in the checkered flags for more than 3.5 million twinkly LED lights. It's the 11th annual Gift of Lights, and as I mentioned, it is open through January 2nd of 2022, 4:30 to 9 on Sundays. And Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it's open. It's open every day of the week. and only will close if there is a monumental snowstorm. If there's just a little flurry, it kind of adds to the delight of the experience. But this year, the 2.5 mile drive through the track will feature 3.5 million lights, a tunnel of lights, new arches, numerous scenes, numerous new scenes have been incorporated, including the popular 12 Days of Christmas and much more. And it's just an incredible, incredible thing. And you will enjoy it if you've done it before. We encourage you to do it again. And if you haven't, well, this would be a great opportunity to do it. And check out the Gift of Lights now through January 2nd, 2022 at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. And for more information, you can go online to nhms.com. A reminder as well, you can catch all of our great programming on nhtalkradio.com, streaming 24 hours a day. The only thing we can't stream are our broadcasts of the Boston Celtics with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell, only because the NBA will not allow us to do that. But other than that, all the programming right here, live every day, nhtalkradio.com. It is Kale and Company, 1450 AM, 1039 on the FM dial, 1019 in the Manchester area. Kale and Company presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by our friends at Weed Family Automotive at 124 Storrs Street in Concord. You can make a reservation right now. Call them for an appointment at 603-225-7988. Bobby and Charlie standing by, and you can check them out online at weedfamilyautomotive.com. WKXL New Hampshire Talk Radio, talking about what matters to you. 1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 on the FM dial, 101.9 FM, our new signal in the Manchester area. Kale and Company, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, 124 Storrs Street in Concord. And joining us now is our resident flick chick, Kitty Ray. Kitty, how are you today?
I am doing awesome. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Great
Good.
To have you with us,
Thank you.
Always. And we always like to hear what you think of some of the movies that are out right now. And I know one that recently opened was West Side Story, the highly anticipated remake and remade by Steven Spielberg. So tell us about it. I know you saw it.
I did. And you know what? And it's funny when you said that about the remake. You know, there's sometimes you wonder, why do movies need to be remade? Because especially when something like West Side Story, you know, is such a classic. And, you know, I'm like, why are people redoing things? It's like, if you've got a good thing, why change it? But when you mentioned Steven Spielberg, you knew things would be changed, right?
Oh, you had to. You had to know that going in. Right. Sure.
That's right. And things are changed and were changed. And in the positive way, and I'm saying that because I am one that, and I'm not going to date myself here, but folks, I was around to see the 1961 film. And the musical, the original musical came out in the 50s, I believe. It was in the late 50s.
Right.
And so I did see the original, I'm going to say film, the one that Natalie Wood was in.
Right.
And, oh my God, I loved, you know, I've loved that. And so I was a little skeptical to go to this one because I am one that, like I said, why change a classic? But as I'm watching this movie, this one, you know, I'm thinking, wait a minute, the audience today, you know, for the new audience, I mean, these people are not always, you know, they want to see something fresh, and this definitely is a fresh take on this movie, on the West Side Story movie, and, you know, it's a musical, it's a romance, I mean, Romeo and Juliet, right?
Absolutely. That's what it's based on, right?
Yeah. And you know how that goes, right? You know, there's no changing that. But I do love, I mean, in this take of it, it has some great songs. I mean, and we know that, who was it, Stephen Sondheim? I mean, the song.
Sondheim did the lyrics.
The lyrics. Yeah, and yeah. I think the original, like, what was it, Bernstein? It Leonard Bernstein?
Yes, yeah. So you think about those collaborators.
Classics.
Yeah, really for Sondheim, I believe it was the first musical that he had ever provided the lyrics for.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was very early in his career, and of course he went on to do so much.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, but... And Leonard Bernstein was, I think more accomplished at that point than Stephen Sondheim. But what a collaboration it was between those, two great, Bernstein had a great reputation, of course, for many, many years before West Side Story. And Sondheim, a relatively unknown lyricist at the time. So it was quite a collaboration.
Yeah, and it really, really is. And will continue to be in future things, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny, as you're saying, as a relatively new, I think one of the things I really did like and enjoyed in this movie was some newcomers. I mean, the cast, these are all people that truly are new to the whole scene here. And I'm not saying they're really new to acting or singing, but they've put them in different roles. But Rachel Zegler, I think it's Zegler, she is the Maria, and she is so, oh my gosh, she's remarkable in it. I mean, in fact, this whole cast is, I mean, when you look at the ensemble here, it's a strong cast, but Rachel as Maria, her voice, she really is very, very talented. Ansel Elgort, he plays Tony, and... he was in some past movies, Baby Driver and things like other movies. And who knew he could sing? I mean, he is, I think, a very a strong singer. But Maria really stands out. And I totally loved Ariana DeBose. She plays, her role was Anita. And, oh, my gosh, between the Maria and the Anitas, I just couldn't stop watching them, and it's like I wanted to see even more of them. And as we know, Rita Moreno is in this as well, and Rita was the original Anita in the film.
Right, yeah. I heard an interview recently with Ariana DeBose, or DeBose, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but...
Yeah,
that she was a big fan of that particular role since she was a little girl.
Correct.
And
she had a lot of, I don't want to say fear, but, she just wanted to make sure she could, be, I don't want to say justified, but to do as well as Rita did.
And knowing that Rita was going to be on the set and involved in the movie.
It gave her some added pressure. But I will say, I think she by far succeeded. And in fact, Ken, I did just recently, I think it came across, I'm not sure where I saw it on, but they've already had, West Side Story has already had some award nominations for this production.
Right.
And one was the Critics' Choice.
Yeah.
And the Golden Globes, though. Golden Globes are the ones that, to me, I kind of follow closely. And it is Rachel for Maria was nominated, and so was the Ariana for Anita. So those two that I just mentioned were awesome in it. But, Rita Moreno, her role in it is not a long, she doesn't have a lot of screen time in this, but I think the continuation or bringing her in from the original one added some continuity here, and for the fans like myself, to see someone from the original movie to come over was, I think, a draw in itself.
And her role of Valentina was written specifically for her.
Correct.
It was written specifically for her, and she is the portrays the widow of Doc,
right,
who had the drugstore.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was actually, if you remember, he was the Doc was the one that used to give the advice to the young people. He was, you know, he was like their mentor. I don't want to say mentor, but like that. He would be giving advice. She, well, I don't want to say too much. She she actually is doing it in this film.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, and they wrote that role. So, you know, there's certainly one of the changes that Steven Spielberg made in producing West Side Story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did
yeah.
some other changes too. And I don't want to mention too many things in it, but there are some changes. I mean, it's not identical. I did love and the, you know, how in the how the Latinos and bringing in the characters, and they speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Not throughout the movie, but parts of the movie, and it's very authentic, definitely very authentic. The dancing, I will say, I loved how, you know, the I already mentioned the songs, but the camera work, there was a few, right up to the very end. In fact, I think even in the credits, I was, again, watching to the very end, and some of the camera work is, wow, I've never really been... I don't want to say mesmerized, but it really was. It was very like, wow, that's awesome. And they used real scenes from the city. So that was, I thought that was pretty cool too. So I didn't think I'd be as enthusiastic about it, but yeah, it's definitely a movie to go see.
You know, a lot of it was about, you know, in the original, a lot of it was about choreography.
Yeah.
And I saw the movie, and the choreography was good, but I don't think as dazzling as it might have been in the 1961 movie.
Oh, you mean in the current movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And there was some other things that I didn't feel was as good as the one in 1961, and I'm going to say I was really disappointed in some of the the songs and the dance routine of the guys, of the Sharks and the Jets. I really was a little disappointed about Officer Crumkey as well.
Really? Really?
Yes. I wish there was more. In fact, it was about midway through this movie before I really started going, wow, okay, now I'm really glad I came to see this movie. And you know what? This sounds really crazy. I really didn't want it to end the way it ended.
You wanted the ending to be changed.
I did. I knew how it was going to end. And I will say, I thought, okay, Steven Spielberg, today's world, technology. Yes, we know this is a classic. But did that really have to end the way it ended? Could we not change it? I wanted it to be different.
Yeah.
Is that...
No, I mean, why not? I mean, other things were changed. I mean, characters were changed. So, yeah, I don't know why it couldn't be. But he did stick to the original ending. And, well, Steven Spielberg, the director, he dedicated, by the way, the film to his father, Arnold, who actually died during the production at the age of 103.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Just an interesting anecdote about that. But
well, that's I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking about Steven Spielberg, though, when you said about how he dedicated it.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about this movie was like Spielberg and the changing of everything, he really knows how to stage a movie.
Yeah, he does.
He really does.
Well, yeah, he's been pretty good at that over the years.
Right.
In fact, I'm just reading here that he acquired the rights, or 20th Century Fox acquired the rights to West Side Story in 2014. That's when they first When Steven Spielberg first expressed an interest in directing the adaptation of West Side Story. So 20th Century Fox then went out and bought the rights so that they were able to remake the film. And it was a long time in the making and finally came out last week and doing well at the box office.
And I'm sure it will continue to. I mean, it's this movie of, you know, you have old and new. And I think that is the big draw. I mean, you can go in and look for that old classic, but there's some new stuff to it. That's going to bring in a whole new, not just a new audience, but new take on everything. So,
So we have to ask you the ultimate question here, that is, how many boxes of popcorn? As you may know, Kitty Ray rates the movies by boxes of popcorn on a scale from 1 to 5, 1 being awful and 5 being very good. So where does West Side Story fall in?
Well, I give it 4 boxes of popcorn, and that's pretty high for me. And I think I would have given it a little, maybe even a half of a box, maybe even 5.
If they change the end.
If Tony and Maria could have just gone off on the sunset, or E.T. come down, or someone save them, or some miraculous thing. Something that we know Steven Spielberg has in him. But I'm sorry, folks, if you really love the classic ending, but I didn't, and I did shed some tears.
Well, we have to take a break here, but I want to come back, and we only have a couple of minutes left, but we want to find out what is in store. What are you going to be attending in the not-too-distant future? So hang in there. Kitty Ray is with us at 1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 FM in the Concord area, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Kale & Company, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Welcome back. It's Kale & Company at 1450 AM, WKXL 103.9 on the FM dial, 101.9 FM in Manchester. We are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive. You can give them a call. Make an appointment right now, 603-225-7988. Kitty Ray, our resident flick chick, is with us. And we want to know, Kitty Ray, what the next movie is that you are going to see.
Well, you know, what's out right now that I really want to and I'm hoping to do soon is The Nightmare Alley. And that's the crime thriller that's directed by Guillermo del Toro. And I think he's going to give Steven Spielberg a run for his money for the best director.
Ah.
And I want to go check it out. And like I said, it's a crime thriller. But I do want to change it up a little. And I might, and this has been out for a little bit, I want to go see Ghostbusters Afterlife. I am, again, old school, wanting to see some Ghostbusters from the past, even though this is a younger cast. And I want to go see what that's about and how they changed that, because I think they do refer to the original Ghostbusters.
Uh-huh.
And I know I'm going from Nightmare Alley to Ghostbusters Afterlife. Completely changing it up. And the other thing, hey, this time of year, there's a lot of reruns of old classic Christmas movies, holiday movies that are out there that I want to see in the next couple of weeks as well.
Outstanding. But Nightmare Alley is coming up, and good cast too. Bradley Cooper. Kate Blanchett, I think, is in it as well. So outstanding.
Yeah.
Well, Kitty Ray, we thank you so much.
And, well, thank you.
And happy holidays.
Thank you, and same to you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. And we'll talk with you soon.
Yes, you will.
And thank you for joining us on this edition of Kale & Company on 1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 FM, and 101.9 FM, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and Weed Family Automotive.